The Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab number 47, take two for April 10th, 2006. Greetings, folks, and welcome to the Mac Observer's Mac Geek Gab. Wow, I can't talk today. I'm talking like my son. Holy smokes.
Were we with him? We were the Gak Geek Gab.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't like that.
This Bell's palsy comes and goes, and every now and then it hits me in a weird way. And I think then was just one of those things. But thankfully, I had a CAT scan on Friday, so that should tell him nothing. So, you know, we were going to talk a lot about cable modems and DSL, and even did a nice interview with Ray this week to talk about a couple of different things. And then Apple, of course, released Boot Camp, which, if you haven't heard, and I'm sure you have, is Apple's dual booting solution for Windows on the Intel-based Macs, which we'll steal Rogue Amoeba's acronym for that, or abbreviation for that, which, of course, is ICBM, Intel chip-based Macintosh.
Boom.
That's right. You know, and a lot of people have been treating this, and John of course, was on Ricky Spiro's Mac Observer Weekly Roundup podcast this past weekend, and if you didn't hear it, you should have, and if you haven't, you'll go listen to it next, because that's how it works. That's right.
You should actually pause this now.
That's right. Go listen to that, and then come back. In fact, why don't we just insert the whole thing here? No, never mind. And people are treating this like it's the second coming here. And it is the second coming, because this is the second time Apple's let you do this. In fact, the first time...
Do tell.
Well, the first time you could do this, you actually had two chips in your Mac, and you could switch back and forth between host operating systems, and they could both be running at the same time. Do you remember what I'm talking about here, John?
Yeah, and I'm trying to think. It was a 6100, I think, was the machine.
Yeah, 6100 PC DOS. Or something. Or DOS, that's it. Yeah, yeah.
A DOS version. And I remember there was a Intel coprocessor. And I think back then, are they still around, Orange Micro? But at one point, they made Orange 286 and all that fun stuff there. So there was a time there where, you could, with the addition of hardware, run Windows or DOS or whatever in a, you know, pretty decent fashion.
Yeah. And everybody, you know, made a semi-big deal out of that, but nothing near what they're making out of this thing here. Well, I tried Boot Camp on the MacBook Pro this week, and so we'll talk about that. And I also
there was one effect. There was one effect I noticed.
Which effect was that?
It was the stock goes up, and I'm happy effect.
Well, there's that. Yeah, that's right, John. I believe John is still an Apple stockholder.
Yes, everybody was, all the analysts were just jumping up and down over that, I think, because I could see no other reason for it to go that high.
Mm-hmm.
Back to you.
Oh, it doesn't matter. We can throw it back to you. In fact, let's throw it to them. What do they have to say? Oh, wait, we can't hear them.
Don't throw things at our listeners. It's rude. You may do that in your band, man.
Yeah, that's right. We do that. It keeps them from throwing things at us, right? We figure if we're preemptive about it. You gotta hit him with a preemptive strike right out of the gate before the first song. You just throw like a bunch of nails at him or something.
Yeah, I could go on a political tangent, but we won't do that.
Oh, yeah, probably not. Wrong show.
Right, wrong show.
In fact, it's the wrong show for a lot of what we just talked about. But anyway, back to
so you installed it.
Pretty. I did, and
easy.
Yeah, it wasn't as easy as it should have been, but a lot of that has nothing to do with Boot Camp. So. What you do for Boot Camp is there's a couple of things. First, you update to 10.4.6, right? Then you have to download Apple's firmware updater for your model of Mac, which for me went fine. And then you download the Boot Camp beta installer. And you run this little app. And this app is cool. The first thing it does is it makes you create a CD or DVD for drivers that you're going to need once Windows is up and running. So you create this CD. And then the next thing you do is partition your disk. And Apple makes this so darn simple that you don't know, as the lay user would never know, how slick this thing is. And it is slick. It's slicker than a mouse's ear, okay? All you do, have you run this? You haven't seen this yet, have you, John? The partitioner, or did you?
Actually, I have. I saw a video of the install process, okay. And yeah, it's unique, somewhat, you know, advanced in partitioning.
Yeah, so you've got
utilities.
Yeah, you've got all your stuff on your Mac volume, and as long as you've got a minimum of 5 gigs free, or 10 gigs free, I guess is what they said. You just run this thing, and you drag a little slider across, and you have to assign a minimum of 5 gigs to your Windows partition, but you can assign more. And you just tell it, okay, yeah, I want to give it, and I told it 5 because I figured that'd be fine. And you tell it 5 gigs, and you just hit a button, and it, like magic, literally like magic, it goes and moves things around, shuffles things as it needs to, and creates this 5 gig partition. I want to buy that because there's tons of times where I've had either clients or myself wanting to, oh, you know, I wish I could chunk off a piece of this drive, and then you just do it. It's like magic. I don't know of any software for the Mac that's that good at partitioning things without non-destructive partitioning. It does not destroy what's on your Mac volume. So, or at least it doesn't in theory, yeah. Right?
I think there's actually, I don't have it in front of me now, but I thought there was actually a command line equivalent, which may have been installed with one of the updates, but it lets
really?
You do non-destructive partition resizing. I mean, I know they have stuff on the PC side. I mean,
yeah.
Partition magic is one thing that
Ghost
I've seen. And,
yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the Apple utility is still destructive. I haven't looked at it lately.
Okay.
This utility, do you know?
I don't know. I was not
maybe
aware.
Maybe it lets you do it too.
There you go.
Well, you try it and
okay.
Let me know.
Yeah, let me try it right now while we're doing this. Let's see what happens. So anyway, it does it. And then once you're done, if you decide you don't want Windows anymore, it'll actually undo it. So I'm wondering if you could use this to just partition your drive without doing the Windows install. But anyway, you do the partition thing, and of course before it partitions the drive, it does a verify on it, and for me it found some problems, so I had to reboot from the CD that came with my MacBook and repair and fix some things with Disk Utility, and then back in and do the partition, and then that worked. And then basically the next step is boot the Windows installer, and of course you need to provide your own Windows CD. That gets a little tricky, and there have been a lot of reports online about it. Only because two things. One, the Windows, I had a volume license kit CD from Windows that would not install. It started to and died halfway through. And now I realize it may have been the media, because I went out this morning and by 9 o'clock I had committed the ultimate sin. Yep. I went to Staples and I bought a full install copy. I spent $170 of TMO's money and bought a full install of Windows XP Home Edition, and was back here, and it started to install, but it wouldn't, and it just didn't sound right. So I had to go and put it in the iMac, burned a new made a CD copy of the Windows install CD, and then it worked fine. And afterwards, found a posting on MacFixit saying that other people had found the same thing, that their MacBooks wouldn't. Wouldn't boot from the Windows XP Home CD. So go ahead.
Yeah, one thing. Because I'm also under some emulators, which we'll maybe talk about in a bit. But there are also Windows copies that are keyed, and I think maybe that was what you were saying. You had an OEM version. I ran into the same thing. It was one that was bundled with a specific computer.
Sure.
Those don't install on general hardware.
That's
or at least
right.
This did not.
No, a lot of this stuff, if you get a copy of Windows with your Dell, it's not going to install on your MacBook, chances are.
Yeah, so, you know, commit the ultimate...
the ultimate sin.
and just get a boxed version. Like we have the MSDN version, the developer.
There you go.
Yeah. Which actually, that's a good program if you're interested in Microsoft at all.
Yeah, Microsoft's actually real good about that stuff.
Now, did you see also... There's a little tangent, but I think some people may. Did you see that Intel released some developers tools?
Really? I did not see
that. For OS X that work under Xcode. I think there's a Fortran, there's a C++. I mean, go figure. Now that, you know, it's a Intel chip, I mean, they have a lot of tools. So
that's great.
We'll see if we can link to something about that. But that's really neat, because it looks like, you know, the developer, you know, tools are growing,
yep.
Which is a very good thing.
So once I went through the hokey pokey of getting the disk right, it once it boots, it's an Intel machine running Windows, and I made it through the install process. It went very, very quickly. It was noticeable that I was running Windows on very fast hardware. And so once Windows was up, you then reboot and put in the CD that you created at the first step of the process.
Uh-huh.
And it auto launches and goes through and installs drivers for things like AirPort and Bluetooth and the right drivers for the video card, which very interestingly enough are look like they were developed by ATI, which might mean that ATI was involved in this and knew about it, before it made the light of day.
Oh, definitely. I actually was when we were at Macworld there chatting with one of the ATI guys, and yeah, he indicated that the Switch made their life a little easier.
I bet.
Now they have to target one processor instead of two.
That's right.
Especially for the integrated chipset. So I'm sure they were involved early, especially after that past little oops they
faux
did.
Pas. Yeah, that's right. So what John's referring to, of course, is the thing where ATI announced that their chips would be in, or their cards would be in, a forthcoming Macintosh model that had not been announced. This was prior to a Macworld show a couple of years ago, and Apple pulled it.
Oops.
Yeah. Well, anyway. And then that was that. Then once it was up and running, I played with some stuff, and it sees it as a dual core machine. It basically is just Windows running on Intel hardware. It just so happens that it is made by Apple.
Now, what's your visibility into, if any, to the Mac partition?
Can you see
it at all?
No. You could see it during the install. And Apple's very clear about this. When you're installing Windows, it shows actually four places that it could put Windows. Three of them are labeled, and one of them is not. And they're labeled C, E, and F, I believe. And then there's a fourth one that's just unpartitioned space. It makes it very clear in the boot camp installation instructions that it has to be installed on C. And if you look, you can see the sizes, and it's not that difficult to discern that, yeah, okay, if I put it there, that's going to go ahead and wipe out my Mac stuff, and, let's just not do that. But it worked fine. I put it on C. I chose to format it in the FAT, F-A-T format, which, because it's bigger than 2 gigs, actually becomes FAT32, as opposed to NTFS. And there's some inherent differences between the two. NTFS has a whole lot more security and that sort of thing. However, OS X natively will only read NTFS and not write it, whereas FAT, it will read and write. When you boot back up to the Mac side, your Windows drive mounts. So if you had formatted it as FAT, you can go back and forth and write things to your Windows drive or copy things to it, and that works just fine. So I highly recommend, if you're going to do this, that you do it as a FAT partition for that reason alone.
Now, my coworker who did this also, did all the drivers and everything work as expected? Because he was having, he wasn't able to get the wireless to work under the Windows environment.
Did he install Windows that was a Service Pack 2 or a Service Pack 1?
As far as I know, it was SP2. I don't think it'll let you install.
Will
they tell you it has to be SP2?
No.
Do SP1?
It will do SP1. I thought that was my problem with the volume license kit. As it turned out, there was an issue with the media. It will let you install SP1, but there are a lot of things that won't work. And the folks that have done it say, look, go get SP2 right away and install it on there. Of course, the problem is one of the things that doesn't necessarily work under SP1 is your networking. So you got to go and download SP2 on the Mac side, which you can. If you search for Microsoft's got a place for, I think they call it their place for IT professionals, and you can actually download the full installer for Service Pack 2 and pull that around. So
excellent. And then, hey, of course, once you do that, you better get that antivirus software on there right away.
Because I was just going to say, yep.
Windows folks.
The first thing I did was I installed Microsoft's Defender, which is Microsoft's anti-spyware app that they bought and sort of pulled in-house. That works really, really well for pulling spyware. I should take a moment here And divulge a dirty little secret.
Dirty.
It is a dirty little secret. That is, for the last, 15 years, I have been one of the most sought-after Windows consultants on the planet. And I've sort of tapered that off in the last couple of years, but I know it sounds egotistical to say, but I'll say it anyway. I'm probably one of the best Windows guys on the planet as far as troubleshooting goes, and have actually made a lot of money doing that. And that's, but like I said, I got out of that business, and now we're doing the TMO thing and Backbeat Media and all that. But
on the planet,
I'd stand up and say that. Yeah.
I'm in awe.
You should be.
on so many levels.
But right, maybe that's a little bit of a stretch, but I'm pretty darn good. So and I've found that Windows Defender has worked very well at keeping machines spyware free. So that and Norton Antivirus has always been my favorite. Do not, if you're going to do this, you know, you definitely want those two things, but you do not want to get Norton Internet Security, because that thing will do far more to your machine than you ever wanted it to. It gets in the way too much. You just want Norton Antivirus and Windows Defender, and you're good to go. Just keep them updated. Windows Defender is free. Norton Antivirus is not, but well worth the price of admission. So,
yeah, because if you're on a shared network, whatever, any high speed network, if you leave your machine sitting there, guaranteed you're going to pick something up.
And, without question.
Could be minutes or hours, but it'll happen. And then you're
maybe days, but you won't need to wait a week. That's right. So there were a couple things that were interesting about this. One was that all the Apple documentation said the iSight camera in the MacBook Pro doesn't work. I thought, okay, fine. And when I opened up the My Computer icon in Windows, I saw a USB camera, and I thought, maybe it does work. I double-clicked on it, and kernel panicked. Blue screen of death. So if you have been waiting all your life to see this blue screen of death that you hear about on the Windows side, that's pretty much one guaranteed way of getting there. And I tried it a couple times, and both times it hit that. The other is that on the MacBook, there's no right mouse button on the on the mouse, and Windows makes a lot of use of the right mouse button. There's a piece of software, and I want to make sure I get the name right, so I'm going to pull it up in front of me here. Piece of software called the Apple Mouse Utility, and we'll link to it, that lets you control click and make that a right click in Windows. So definitely a good piece of software to have. I'm sure Apple will address that in some future release of Boot Camp, but for now.
Now, will it recognize a multi-button mouse?
Absolutely. I unplugged everything except power from my MacBook because I didn't want anything messing with. I know how Windows is when it, you know, when you install stuff, it sees something that it doesn't know what it is and it just freaks out. So, well, that's just how it is, right? You've done it. So
I have a disk around, but if you don't, it could.
I wanted to give it a true test. I didn't want to, you know, beat on the poor thing before it was ready. So I got it up and running. I got, you know, all my spyware stuff and antivirus on there. I ran some tests and then I plugged it into everything else. As far as the hardware goes, it works great. When you close the lid on the Mac, it goes to sleep. When you open the lid, it wakes back up. It's not like the emulators of yesteryear. It's not doing anything weird. It's just running Windows. So, but I did notice that I plugged it into the cinema display. I had to go in and into the display preferences and tell it not to mirror, because the first thing it did was it just mirrored my desktop from the laptop onto the cinema display. But I was able to eventually navigate through the ATI controls and make the dual screen setup, and it worked great. It just no problem at all.
Wow. So did you play any games? Because Windows is really good for playing games.
I haven't yet played any games. I started this last night, and that's when the disk didn't work. So I was only able to get it going this morning, and I also wanted to check out Parallels, which is this other thing that came out last week. So no, I have not played any games.
All Windows is really good for.
That's right. One other thing I wanted to mention is that many times in the Windows environment, you'll need to hit Control-Alt-Delete, not necessarily to reboot your Mac, but to access the task manager in Windows or log in or log out if you're on a network environment. the delete key on the MacBook Pro is mapped to backspace in Windows. So Control Alt Delete will not work. If you have a full size keyboard and you actually hit the delete key as opposed to the forward delete key, that'll work. But Control Shift Escape on the MacBook will do the same thing as Control Alt Delete. So for those of you out there that are doing that, that's good to know. Right?
Speaking of the keyboard, do we want to speak of the keyboard?
The keyboard? Sure. You can speak of the keyboard. It's this gray thing with letter... Oh, no.
So who'd we get a note from about a keyboard?
Mm-mm-mm. Let's stay on topic here. We'll get to that at the end. Yeah, I don't want to jump too far off at tangents here. But we are pretty much wrapped up with boot camp. I can only see this getting easier, and it wasn't difficult to begin with, right? It's going to get easier. The install, I think eventually it's going to be running in what they call a virtualized mode, where you've got Mac OS X and Windows running at the same time. And there are two products out there that, in the mainstream anyway, that are doing this. Of course, Virtual PC was the prior way of doing this. And John and I were talking about Virtual PC earlier today and had very mixed results. You hated it, right?
Well, on the PowerBook, it's mostly window updates and stuff. I don't know if I got the wrong video drivers or what. I mean, I even put it in 16-bit instead of...
Yep.
Yeah, and it's just, it's pretty pokey. I mean, it works. You know, I can surf and things like that. It sees the network. So I don't know if there's something weird with my install. My dual G5, 2 gigahertz, it's quite acceptable.
Okay. I always ran it on my PowerBook and never had an issue. I basically only ran it to use PC Anywhere to log into a couple of computers that I needed to get to. PC Anywhere being a remote desktop control software. But it worked fine. It wasn't blazingly fast, but it wasn't horrible. And it gets the job done. And if you're on a PowerPC-based Mac, it is the most integrated solution available. You can drag files in and out. They've really done a nice job sort of tying the whole thing together. So I still highly recommend that as the basically the only workable solution on a PowerPC-based Mac.
Of course, and the sharing, it does that well, too,
yeah.
Is that you can have a shared folder between the environment, so that makes it real handy to move data back and forth if you need to.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but Virtual PC doesn't run on the Intel Macs yet. It will not run in Rosetta. So, last week or the week before, we talked about the solution from OpenOS10.com, and that works fairly well in a what they call a virtualized mode or a windowed mode, but... this week, and I think the reason they got a lot of press was simply because they timed their release with that of Boot Camp, and I don't know if they knew this, but a company released a product called Parallels, which we'll link to in the show notes, which basically does the same thing. You can download it for free. OpenOS 10, you've got to pay I think it's $30 or $35. Parallels is free for 30 days, and then it's going to be $50. And the installer's a little bit slicker than the one from OpenOS 10. It's still not perfect. It does some weird things with the mouse, but... It gets it done, and it lets you run Windows inside while your Mac OS is also running. It just runs it in a window like Virtual PC did. Honestly, for me, that's a much more preferable solution. But it doesn't. There are things it doesn't do. Boot Camp will let me see my DVD burner as a DVD burner, and will actually let me burn DVDs to it, presumably. Parallels and OpenOS 10, the emulators they use, do not let you do that sort of thing. They only see it as a CD drive. There are hardware limitations there. Of course, with Apple supporting Boot Camp, the drivers over there are only going to get better and better. So there you go. What do you think, John?
Something on the VMware on the PC side that I think is something similar.
Okay.
So it is nice to see the
I think
the emulators.
And I think
that's
Parallels.
That's going to be built in.
Yeah.
Parallels.
Parallels will run on base. On a Windows machine, I think, too. That'd be interesting to run Parallels on a MacBook running, you know, boot camped Windows XP. Be an interesting way to test it, huh? Get that? Get that circular reference there?
But hey, I think this whole thing is, you know, pretty much you know, at least the boot camp thing is a nice way to kind of sneak a Mac into an otherwise Windows environment just to try it out.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't think it's going to change the world, but, you know, it may change Apple's market share. It may add a percent to their market share, right? Eventually. And that's not a bad thing.
Maybe another halo effect.
It could be. Yes. It could just add to the halo effect. There you go. Yep. All right. Well, we are not going to dig too deep into the cable versus DSL thing. In fact, we're going to take this interview that we did earlier this week, and I'm going to release it as a separate show. We'll just put it together. You should see it in another day or two here. I don't want to make it wait till next week, but we'll just release it as a separate show, and then we've got some bits and pieces of that conversation to catch up with next week. We do have a couple of things to talk about here from previous shows, and I'm looking here because this is all so crazy. You know, I had asked about last week I'd asked about a piece of software, or I'd talked about the location manager from OS 9. And what it used to do was let you not just set your network settings, which is what OS 10's location in the Apple menu does, but it used to set your time zone and network shares and all that. Well, I talked about it last week, and somebody posted in the comments at the Mac Geek Gab site there. And sure enough, there's a piece of software called Location X, and it does all that good stuff, but this time with OS 10. Now, near as I could tell, it's not a universal binary, but that really may not matter. It's not something that's running all the time. It's just changing settings and going back around. It'll even run a shell script for you. So if there's stuff that it won't do, but you want to make it do, you can just, at the flick of a switch, it does it all. So thank you to whomever it was that posted that over at the TMO forums in the comments there. What else do we have, John? You wanted to talk about the keyboard, didn't you?
I want to talk about the keyboard.
Talk to me about the keyboard.
Sort of. I think we were mentioning this last week.
Did I introduce you? This is the well-oiled John Braun with us, ladies and gentlemen. Well-oiled.
Not at the moment.
No, huh?
I will be later.
That was one of our listeners sent that in as a great introduction for you. So
Well-oiled.
Yeah. Anyway.
I was mentioning this last week about, keyboard navigation, right? I think you or I or somebody.
Yeah.
We're talking about that.
Yeah.
And actually, yeah, my the coworker who has the new portable was going on about that. There's nothing, Because Windows, definitely is much more approachable from a keyboard. Angle, but apparently they've added this, and neither you or I knew about it. But there are a couple of things that they build in. I think what you do have to do is they'll go to the keyboard and mouse system preference, and I think you want to say, is it universal access or all?
You want
access?
To turn on? Yeah, I believe it's universal access.
Let me bring up the bring it up here in a moment.
So yeah, the question was from a listener: how do I make the keyboard fully control my system, sans mouse, a la Windows? And frankly, Windows, I think Windows is still better at this than the Mac, but there's more to it than we had originally realized.
Yeah, so here it is. Okay, full keyboard access on the bottom there, and you want, yep. And what you probably want to do is say all controls, but then the two quick ones that you can do, and both you and I verified this.
Just to back up a little bit, this is the keyboard and mouse preference pane in system preferences, and then you go to the keyboard shortcuts tab in there, and the options John's talking about for full keyboard access are at the bottom.
Thank you, brother.
You got it. I'm here to crystallize your thoughts.
You're here for me. Thank you. All right. And then the two of the quickies. So one, I believe it's function control F2. If you're on a
laptop,
portable or a laptop, yeah, you got to hold down function. So function control 2 brings up, it lights up the Apple menu. And then if you go right and left with the arrow keys, it scrolls through the menus. And then if you go up and down, it. So guess what? You can pretty much totally use the keyboard.
Yep.
And similar things apply to like dialogue, boxes where you have OK and, that's why you want to choose all controls, I believe, is so you can.
Right.
Get buttons and other things like that. And I don't have off the top of my head, I think, is it tab or shift tab? But now, how do you remember all that stuff there? And that's another,
yeah, good question.
Tip here I wanted to offer is, and this is also a question of that I get from new owners. You know, how do I find out these keyboard shortcuts? Well, when you're in the Finder, you go to the Help menu, Mac Help, and you type keyboard shortcut, and there you go. It'll give you, I mean, it's still kind of scattered around. Sometimes, I don't know, the Help, I think, is, you know,
the seems quality like an depends on... Yeah.
Yeah, but it does eventually, like here they have, you know, using the keyboard to perform certain actions, and they do rank the importance or, you know, how closely they think it meets your request. But if you do something like that in the Mac Help application and do a keyboard shortcut, you will get articles that do tell you all of the key combinations.
That's right.
Not a lot of them. I mean, some of them I just do unconsciously, like deleting and stuff, you know, would be Command Delete and things like that. So it looks like they've really improved that to just, you know, put it on par with Windows in that respect.
Yeah,
so keyboard away. And it's great if you know, somehow don't have a mouse or your trackpad doesn't work or something.
Or the batteries die in your wireless mouse. Anybody ever been there? Raise your hands. I sure have.
Yeah.
Now, you pointed something out to me before we started the show. The Control F2, or as John said, Function Control F2 if you're on a laptop, gets you to the menu bar. But Control F3 or Function Control F3 gets you to the dock. And so that's an easy way of launching those apps that you've got down there, too.
Wow.
Excellent little hint.
It just keeps getting better.
It gets better and better. But Brad had something to say. That's a whole different topic, and we're just going to go there. I think we're going to go there. Brad?
Hi, my name is Brad. I'm calling to leave a little bit of feedback concerning that gentleman on your latest show who wasn't able to play podcasts sequentially. You mentioned using playlists, but one of the problems with playlists is that, at least with the smart playlist, you aren't able to get already played podcast out of the playlist, and I just wanted to leave a little bit of feedback on how to do that. You create a smart playlist, and you make the first of the rules that it has to be a podcast. And then if you put the pod, or if for the next option you put last played is not in the last 360 days or some obscenely high number, that'll basically make every playlist or every podcast that hasn't been played in the last year not be in the list, so that way you're not getting getting podcasts that you've already listened to. Anyway, love the show. Just want to leave it all this feedback.
Excellent, thanks, Brad. That will definitely work. As will, I believe, you can choose play count, and you can just say zero, and that way it will. And it will do that same thing. Mm-hmm. Play count or the last play date is only updated when you actually finish. So if you're the type of person that hears the podcast starting to wind up, you know, at the last 10 seconds and you just hit next, it will not log it as played. Another interesting thing is, and one of our listeners pointed this out to me because they said,
I'm glad
look,
they're smarter than we are.
They are. Oh yeah. Yeah. And this is great. This is the thing I love about podcasts is this whole back and forth thing. This is our show and not just John and I's show, but it's our show. You too. So, One of you pointed out to me that, wow, you know, Dave, you guys gave these instructions and they sounded like they would work, and I play the podcast, but it doesn't play the next one. And I said, well, I'm pretty sure it did. And so I went and recreated it, and I said, yeah, man, it does, no problem. He says, no, it doesn't. And then, I don't know, about 12 hours later, I got an email from him, and he says, I figured it out. If Shuffle is on, then it will not play the next podcast. And I thought, really? And I tried it, and sure enough, he was right. And then I noticed if you go to Get Info, or you file Get Info or Command I for any given podcast or any given song in iTunes, if you go to the Options tab, which currently is the third tab over, there's a little checkbox at the bottom that says Skip when Shuffling. And this is set automatically for every podcast. So you've got to either come in and uncheck these or turn off shuffle mode, which if you had a sequential playlist of podcasts, you'd probably want to turn off shuffle mode anyway, right? Because otherwise you'd get things out of order, and you may or may not want that. So just to cover all your bases there, that's the deal. You like that, John?
Awesome.
You're checking it out, aren't you?
I'm with you. Uh-huh. I was checking something else out here, this pledge.
Yeah. The pledge. Oh, yes, that's right. The folks at Apple Matters, Hadley Stern over at applematters.com, published an article this week asking Mac users to take a pledge. And I think Ricky alluded to this in his podcast this week, too. Asking Apple users to, or Mac users, Mac owners, to take a pledge never to run Windows on their Mac. Now, of course, I've already admitted to breaking this pledge.
High crimes and mysteries.
But, you know, his advice was, look, if you want to run Windows, buy a Dell or something else, but don't run it on your Mac, because that will only encourage or discourage Mac developers or software developers in general from going ahead and developing Mac software. I like articles like that because they get people thinking and they get people talking. That's actually one of my favorite kind of articles, especially being the publisher of Mac Observer. That's the kind of thing that's great. I can't say that I agree with Dear Hadley on this one, and he's a good friend of mine. It's the kind of thing that kind of makes you scratch your head and think a little bit and maybe even voice your opinion, and that is a beautiful thing. So,
freedom, brother. Yeah, you know, because the way I look at it, as long as hardware is still a profitable business for Apple.
Absolutely, I believe it's their most profitable business. Is it not?
Yeah, I don't know where they're at with the percentage of income and revenue that comes from hardware, but it's up there.
Yeah.
I don't know. Last I saw was maybe about half and half split between the computing and the music products.
Yeah.
Which in and of itself is pretty amazing that they've gotten to that point. I think they've got beyond that.
Yeah, yeah, you're probably right. We're going to skip a couple of these text questions here. There is one email I wanted to get to, but first, since we're talking about...
Oh, I'm sorry. No, the good thing is they sell hardware, and that helps Apple stay healthy and they'll stay in business. So
that's a good thing.
They may not sell the machine and the OS, but just selling more hardware is good because it keeps Apple alive. So
I'll disagree with you there, though. I like the built the whole widget approach. That frankly, that's the thing that's kept me with the Mac all these years. The result of that is what's kept me with the Mac all these years. I like the fact that the same people that designed the hardware design the OS, and it's so tightly integrated that's the beauty of the Mac. Do you disagree?
I'm with you on that.
Okay, good.
Because
if you weren't,
I just
mute you now. No, never mind.
But yeah, I'd much rather have OS 10 users than people running Windows on the machines.
Oh yeah, definitely. It's just a nicer bunch of people, don't you think?
In general, yeah.
Yeah, I think so. All right. So there was a post to the .Mac blog, and if you don't read this and you are a .Mac user, you should, talking about syncing .Mac on the web. And it actually works. You can get your bookmarks and your address books, and I think even your iCal calendars, directly from your .Mac login. And any changes you make there sync back to your Mac via .Mac syncing, assuming you've got that turned on. So it's actually... Did you know about that already? Was this just news to me? And
it just kind of happened. I've always had it enabled. Yeah, it's really actually one of the really neat little pieces. Yeah, if you have .Mac set on automatic.
Yeah,
it's really kind of neat. I haven't seen Windows approach that. Maybe for a certain specific application.
Sure.
Just for syncing stuff among all your machines, and you kind of don't know what's happening.
Yep.
Nor care. .Mac and the syncing, which is as it should be.
Yeah,
I shouldn't have to worry that it's doing. I mean, every now and then it'll squawk when .Mac has a little hiccup.
Right.
We're like, oh no, I can't sync. But
there you go.
A
couple other things I noticed on the web this week. The article, I'll put it in the show notes this week. The link to the article that talks about the different MacBook Pro serial numbers. We alluded to that last week, and there are some that Apple's actually doing a recall on. So there's an article that Jason O'Grady published over at PowerPage that details all of these. And one other thing, while we're in iTunes here, if you go to a podcast and go to Get Info, there is, I'm sorry, not Get Info, but if you right click on a podcast, you'll see a podcast episode, you'll see a couple of new options here. One of which says, do not auto delete. And that way you can make it so that that particular episode does not get auto-deleted when iTunes goes through and cleans up your old podcast. And then the other is, of course, the add to playlist option, which is out there. And I believe those are both fairly new. I know the do not auto delete is. You see that, John? That's not bad stuff, is it?
Huh, look at that. Yeah, I don't right click on that often.
No, most people wouldn't. And I think that's the only place you would see that. I'm looking to see if you see it anywhere else, and it's not in any of the menus. That's it.
Yeah, you know, iTunes, I'm still waiting for like a revamp of the music store.
Yeah.
I think it's gotten a bit overloaded.
Yeah, well, there's a lot that needs to be fixed there. We won't even get into the whole thing about how there needs to be a new way of finding podcasts. Because if any of you out there, you should probably know my sense of humor by now. Driving home from gigs, I like to listen to comedy stuff because it keeps me awake. And I'd love to find some podcasts that are funny that I could listen to, but I can't. I mean, I don't know where to start looking. I honestly don't. This is where I know to start looking, by begging you to tell me. That's it. That's all I can do. Beyond that, I'm at a loss. I'll turn on talk radio or something. So please.
Or, you know, if you want to leave us a funny voice clip or maybe not.
maybe not.
Record your favorite joke.
Actually, you could do that. That'd be fine. I'll listen to that on the way back. Keep in mind, I usually have about an hour. So, I don't know that I want to. Although, it keep me awake, skipping through 60 different little funny comment tidbits. I might crash from not paying attention to the road, but I certainly wouldn't fall asleep. And then there was this last email that we got here, John. I don't know if you saw this. It was Allison wrote in and says, "Prison walls, coarse grass, and rankweed straggled over the Jorkins is not a man to respond to a proposition of this peculiar Esquire Junior and the lovely and accomplished Miss Helena. Oh, hold me to your heart, my husband. Never cast me out. Do not produce a flat folded paper parcel from which he took out with would play profound attention, perhaps for 5 minutes, when she I really had some fear of Mr. Micawber's dying on the spot." You know?
Is that like a Harlequin novel? Or?
I'm not sure what that is.
What the heck was that? Yeah, I've gotten the,
That's my favorite spam these days.
I suspect those go through the spam filters because they don't yet have a gibberish score.
Yes, it needs a gibberish score. That's right.
Because that was... Yeah,
that's gibberish, man.
That ranked up there. So... Usually I find other things with my filter's been picking up a lot more stuff lately.
That's good.
But it's gotten a lot better. It learns.
That's good.
Spam.
All right. Hey, the band got louder.
You let him in.
I did. All right. So next week, probably go through more listener feedback because we've got a ton of it to get through. We tried to touch on a little bit tonight, but it's starting to pile up again. So we'll sort of
Send us more. Where would they send it?
And by they, I mean you.
Their listeners
would send it to MacGeekGab@MacObserver.com, or they could Skype their audio comments into MacGeekGab. And there's quite a few of you using that now, which is very good to see. They can use the phone, John.
The phone? It probably starts with 206 and then...
666 and then... Geek. Perfect. 206-666-GEEK will do
geek.
It. Podcast Alley votes, we always appreciate, and we really like the reviews you write for us on iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
Our hosting is provided by Cashfly, and if you want to sponsor the show, get in touch with the folks, our sales folks over at the Backbeat Media Podcast Network, and they will take care of you in a very, very nice way. I want to thank you for listening. Thank you for staying subscribed.
Tell your friends.
Thank you for being you. Don't forget about the AAC enhanced feed. It's a wonderful thing that Michael does. You'll get the links for the show notes probably sooner than you'll get them from me. So, good night, John.
Done.
Yeah, we're done.